Hello, this is Gabriella Contarides here with Sunday, the 15th of February edition of The Gender Spot. On the programme this week, I'm delighted to say that we'll be joined by our wonderful panel of Leeds University students to discuss 50 Shades of Grey. Please be advised that during the programme, we may be discussing topics that some may find triggering. Enjoy.
Being safe in a new city can be stressful for some. Here at the Student Advice Centre, you can chat to us about anything in confidence, whether it's academic or personal.
And remember, the Student Advice Centre is here for you.
Broadcasting 24 hours a day from Leeds University Union.
The sound of students in Leeds.
This is Leeds Student Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Gender Spot. You're listening to Gabriella Contarides.
And my name's Frances Black. This is our weekly gender talk show where we bring you the latest news, discussions and debates about sexism from around the world.
We're live in the studio this week and we'd love to get you involved in our discussions. You can tweet us by using the hashtag TheGSpot at LSR, or you can chat to us via the LSR website or on our Facebook page, The Gender Spot.
This week, to kick things off, we have a really exciting show lined up. But we must warn our listeners that this show contains content that some may find triggering or offensive, including discussion of a sexual nature, of abusive relationships and of sexual assault. We'll be talking about the new 50 Shades of Grey film that's been so hotly anticipated the world over, and whether the franchise promotes healthy relationships and sexual activity.
But more of that in just a minute. Each week, our wonderful music contributor, Francesca Pidgeon, will be introducing her theme or artist for the music that we'll be playing throughout the show. But we're going to play the first song just after the news. For now, Frances is going to start us off with our weekly dose of news about gender equality here in the UK and internationally.
In the UK, there's been a 20% rise in the number of women being supported by local domestic abuse services, a women's charity has said. On Valentine's Day last year, 1,548 women and children sought help from an abusive relationship, according to women's charity Women's Aid. Girl Guiding launches a badge for global gender equality. Earning the Breaking Barriers badge, aimed at girls aged 10 to 14, teaches guides about the limitations women and girls face around the world. Rosie Batty, an anti-domestic violence campaigner, has made an app called iMatter, designed to empower young women and help them understand the warning signs of abusive and controlling relationships. The government has announced that teachers, doctors and nurses will have a mandatory duty to report suspected cases of female genital mutilation under planned new measures. Bernard Jenkin, a Conservative MP who was in charge of candidates before the last election, has said that the Conservatives are not succeeding in getting more women into Parliament, and new laws may be needed to improve the gender balance in the House of Commons. In international news, this month, thousands of women in Turkey have protested at the murder of a young woman who allegedly resisted an attempt by a bus driver to rape her. They have arrested three men in connection with her death. Thousands of women staged protests in several cities on Saturday, and in Istanbul, women activists held two separate protests to show their anger at the murder. Two Saudi women who were detained for defying the kingdom's ban on female drivers have been freed after more than 70 days of custody, a report says. They were arrested while campaigning for the ban to be eased.
So that was Frances with this week's news. And so, as I mentioned before, each week our brilliant music contributor Francesca Pidgeon will be introducing a different theme or artist or genre. Unfortunately, Francesca's actually sick today, so we're going to be playing her songs for her, but she sent us a nice little explanation of why she's picked each song. So Frances, would you like to introduce our first one?
So the first song is Cheerleader by St. Vincent's. Francesca chose this song because she said it's about not just cheering from the sidelines for others, and it's from her 2011 album Strange Mercy. Her most recent album was voted Best Album of 2014 by The Guardian and Enemy.
So enjoy.
I've had good times with some bad guys. I've told whole lies with a half smile. Held your bare bones with my clothes on. I've thrown rocks then hit both my arms. I don't know what good it serves. Pouring my purse in the dirt.
So that was Cheerleader by St. Vincent's, and we're live in the studio. You're listening to Gabriella and Francis Black, and you can join us on Twitter by using the hashtag TheGSpot or by using the Facebook page TheGenderSpot, and we'd love to hear from you. So on to the main discussion for this week's show. It's a movie about a gorgeous, rich, and ultimately damaged man who falls for a virginal, clumsy, plain, kind of insecure girl. No, I'm not talking about the Twilight series, but what you might call an adult version of it, 50 Shades of Grey. The book alone outsold Harry Potter, while the movie, released just in time for Valentine's Day, has taken £1 million in pre-booking sales before it was even released. Now, the books have sparked controversy, with many describing it as liberating, and sex can now be talked about in the mainstream media, and with women and men alike reading it on the underground. However, others have seen the book as a clear example of domestic abuse. So without further ado, here is a clip from the adverts, and make of it what you will.
So this is just an interview for the newspaper. I just have a couple of questions.
Mr. Gray will see you now.
What was he like?
He was polite, intense, smart, really intimidating.
I'd like to know more about you.
There's really not much to know about me. Look at me.
To what do you owe your success?
I exercise control in all things, Miss Steele.
It must be really boring.
I'm incapable of leaving you alone.
Then don't.
My tastes are very singular. You wouldn't understand.
So that was a short edited clip of the movie advert for 50 Shades of Grey. And today we've got our lovely panel, and we're going to be discussing 50 Shades. And the panel is made up of Jen Pritchard and Chelsea Spencer, both English literature students at the University of Leeds, as well as our own Francis Black.
Hi.
So if you'd just like to say hi.
Hello.
Hi.
So we'll be coming to them shortly, but first let's hear what the students of Leeds University had to say when Francis asked them about 50 Shades of Grey. She went around the campus asking them about what they thought of 50 Shades and its portrayal of relationships.
With a pinch of salt. If you read it purely as fiction, I think that's fine, but actually looking into the portrayal of relationships, I think it's a really negative portrayal of the way women supposedly like to be treated in a modern day relationship. She professes to be like an academic and a really intelligent woman, but actually she just succumbs to what could be read as abuse.
Right. I think it sends off quite a dangerous message, because it almost seems as though he is exploiting her vulnerability, and in she doesn't actually give consent in all the situations. And I think there's even one instance where she uses the safe word and he just keeps going, and I think that's not a very accurate, it's a dangerous way to depict that kind of community, if you can call it a community, that partake in like that kind of activity, because that's not how it should be.
I think it's awful. Portrays basically abusive relationships, because the idea is that a lot of people argue that it's BDSM, but the whole point of the BDSM community is consent, and if someone says no, that's the end of it. Whereas in the film and the books, the main character Anna says no a lot, and the guy just carries on. So basically it's a terrible representation of that sort of thing. Anna's a hopeless character. She's pitiful. She's worse than Bella from Twilight. She's worse. She's sort of gone downhill from there.
So she's worse than Bella from Twilight. That is the opinion of one of the Leeds University students on 50 Shades of Grey, the movie. So we're going to be talking about the movie, and we're going to kick off the conversation by asking the question to our lovely panel. What do you guys think about how 50 Shades portrays relationships? Do you think it portrays a healthy relationship? How do you think that Christian in particular, he's the guy who's in charge of, basically he conducts the whole movie and he decides what's going on and what Anastasia is going to do at all times. So what do you think of him as a male?
I think one of the things that's quite has obviously come from the books is this whole idea of like, I want my own Christian Grey, and like mugs and t-shirts and all sorts of things about him being like the ideal man. And I just, like, other than the fact that he does a lot of sex. Like, there's not very much about him which is particularly appealing as a boyfriend. But then that's all within the sort of sphere of the fact that the entire book is, like, entirely illogical in terms of the characters. Like,
and I think it's not just Christian Grey who lacks personality.
Absolutely.
It's Anastasia Steele as well. I think they're both quite vapid characters.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of women, I think it's like Bella Swan from Twilight, obviously 50 Shades is Twilight fan fiction. I feel like Anastasia is this sort of blank canvas for maybe insecure women to project themselves onto.
Well, what's quite good in lots of erotica is that you do have characters where there's a lot of space for projecting yourself onto it, and that can be quite an enjoyable thing in some erotic texts, but that doesn't seem intentional in 50 Shades of Grey. Rather that there's just not very much going on anywhere, and like you hear in the advert, like, oh, there's not that much about me. No, there genuinely isn't.
Yeah. I mean, there really isn't. I saw the movie last night and I was just struck with how uninteresting she was. I mean, there was just no substance to her. She's just a girl kind of wandering around being told what to do, and I just felt like she had absolutely no backbone. But what do you think about Christian as does he portray a dominating male role, and do you think that young women in particular who go and see this movie will think that that's an acceptable way to be in a relationship?
I think he does, but I think they use wealth quite a lot to kind of make it much more glamorous, because if you think about it from, like, a different point of view, if Christian wasn't, like, rich, he wasn't good-looking, I don't know how many girls would put up with that. It's only because he's got, like, those two things, really, that I feel he's kind of, like, portrayed as a sexy kind of guy.
I agree. I think it also, like, kind of reinforces the stereotype that men have to have money and have to have power, you know, to impress a girl,
absolutely.
Which is also a damaging stereotype as well. The idea that you're not really worth much unless you can, like, take a woman out on ridiculous helicopter rides.
Yeah, which is ridiculous as well, because, like, I'd have no problem if I was, like, the one that earned the most in the relationship.
Right.
It's about, like, how they make you feel, and I don't think I'd like to be made to feel the way Anastasia feels.
It uses a kind of mask of the dom sub relationship to actually just enforce terrible gender stereotypes under the disguise of being like, oh well, that's BDSM for you, and it's just not.
Well, what would you say about Anastasia maybe portraying quite a liberating role? You know, she's showing the mainstream media that we can talk about sex and it's something that we can discuss openly. Do you think she's a good example of something bringing taboo subjects into the mainstream?
Well, it's pretty frustrating in terms of it's a little bit two-sided. The fact that people are saying that 50 Shades of Grey is the reason that suddenly women can talk about sex is a little bit insulting. I mean, it is also fantastic in terms of like, people can talk about kink a lot more and people feel a lot more comfortable buying into sex toys, and there's a lot less shame attached to that for a lot of people now because of 50 Shades of Grey. But in saying that the reason women now feel more liberated is because there's a terrible book about...
Because women have been publishing erotica, being involved in pornography for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, people say, oh, you know, but it's helping women celebrate their sexuality. But at what cost? I mean, you know...
Absolutely.
The book does condone rape. Mm-hmm. It does condone... Yeah. Abusive relationships. So is that really the kind of sexual liberation we want to be, like, selling to women? I don't know, for me it's not. But
no, I don't think Anastasia actually liberates sexuality, because she's a 21 year old and she can't even say the word vagina. Like, she has to call it, like, my area or, like, there or something like that.
And she doesn't really seem to know what's happening a lot of the time.
Yeah. No.
Because the whole point of, like, being sexually liberated is being a lot more aware of knowledge of your own body and other people's bodies and what you like and what you don't like. She doesn't get that.
Yeah, she doesn't have any.
She has
idea.
Things happen to her. And in terms of her personally as a liberating figure, that's just not the case.
With the relationship as well, I think it definitely romanticises really abusive tendencies like stalking, extreme jealousy. When I was younger, I thought that was really hot.
Yeah.
Like, I thought
a man that
I'd
won't
love
let
to
you
have
do
a guy
things,
that was like so obsessed with me that he'd be really jealous of me if he saw me like with another, like talking to another guy, which is terrible because that's not love, that's abuse.
It's so funny you say that because I saw the movie with a couple of friends and we came out and we were obviously discussing the movie and I think we all had very different opinions of what we thought about it, but one of them just said, I'd like to fix him, you know, I'd really like to fix him. Frances is just shaking her head like, no. But what do you think about that? About the female, the young girl, the virginal, pure, in quotation marks, young girl who has absolutely no life experience, who's exposed to this actually dangerous man with very dark tendencies. And I'm not saying BDSM is dark, I'm saying the way that he has portrayed it is very dark. Yeah. How would you say, how would you respond to saving him?
I do think I'd want to. Personally, I just run.
Well, I can completely, like, get that, like, lame duck thing. For a lot of women, that is an enjoyable idea to try somebody who needs help or, like a fixer-upper. Like, that's the thing that a lot of women enjoy. But in 50 Shades of Grey, that's linked to a whole other sort of very dark area and very troubling area, which is not dealt with properly. Mm. If he's just a guy who, I don't know what to say, but like he's just like not really on the straight and narrow and sort of there's a little bit of give and take in that relationship. What you have here in terms of somebody that needs to be fixed is someone that's been abused. Yeah. And that's a whole different kettle of fish.
I think it's a very codependent kind of thing to go into a relationship and say, I want to fix it. And I think one of the worst, you know, like in the advert it says, no, you're changing me. And I think one of the worst things about this trilogy is it implies that you can fix your abuser, which is why so many men and women stay with their abusers, because they think they can change them and they can fix them, and you can't fix someone. Like, they have to fix themselves.
Yeah. And actually, like, by the end of the books as well, because they actually do have a happy ending. Like, the end of the first book where she, like, walks away after, like, that, whipping...
A particularly aggressive episode.
One. And, like, I think she should have just stayed away, personally. But, like, no, she goes back. Like, it doesn't even take her a week to go back because he's so persistent.
I think it... Like, the going back is... It happens in real life, and that's understandable. Mm. But the book does not talk about the issues surrounding that. It's just romanticised in the, like, going back to him because she really, really loves him.
And because he might change... Yeah. Because she can change him, which is just really sad because, like... I think it's all very well to be like, oh no, but I like the book and it's liberating, but one in five women will be a victim of domestic abuse. And some people that I know that love this book that say, oh, like, you know, I think Christian Grey's the perfect man. It's a bit scary sometimes when you look at their relationships, they don't always seem to be the healthiest.
Well, just,
but then again, some people, that's not the case for everyone, obviously.
Yeah.
Picking up on what you said earlier, Frances, about when you were younger, you quite liked the idea of a man being jealous and quite possessive. Mm. There's some quite prominent parts in the book where he follows her to wherever she is. So, for example, on her graduation, he interrupts her conversation with her dad, who's come to visit her for her graduation, takes her to her apartment, is sexually involved with her, and then leaves her by herself on the night of her graduation. And he drops it again when she goes to visit her mum. He just turns up and takes her away from her mum. And what do you think that the film and the book portray about and teach young women about men being having basically stalkerish tendencies? Would you say that he's sexy and kind of jealous, but only to a kind of possessive boyfriend extent, or is he actually a bit of a stalker?
I think in terms of, like, describing him, because, like, obviously stalking takes various forms, but the patterns that happen in the book of that he just appears, like, in some cases that does happen in other erotic texts, that the person that they're most thinking of manifests themselves and appears to them. But the way that, like you said, that's linked up with his wealth and that's linked with his dedication to her, it's not dedication for somebody to interrupt every kind of situation that you have outside of them. And the way that is in the book is entirely positive. The fact that he's always there to to rescue her from situations, and she has no life outside of him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even when he's not there, she's still got this like non-disclosure agreement thing that she had to sign with the contract. And like, I don't know about you, but like, when I've like seen someone or I've been on a date with someone, like, one of the things I look forward to most is going and like meeting up with my friends, talking about it, like completely overanalyzing the situation, just because it's like funny and like gossiping about it. But like, imagine if you couldn't do that, like, your friends would have no idea what was going on in your life, and neither would your family.
But that's an example of isolating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a
classic
sign of abuse, is isolating someone from their friends and family.
Yeah.
Or, like, creating a secret that they can't talk about.
Yeah.
So that's it's like textbook example of abuse.
Yeah.
And I think with the stalking as well, it's like Twilight, you know, it's portrayed as, like, this really romantic thing, but actually that's, like, you know, that's restraining order material.
Yeah,
like,
I do.
Someone come, you know, like, invading your life, that's like...
Yeah, because it's all well and good for a lot of women and for lots of people who look at it with a critical eye or who, I don't know, have a context outside of the book to read it with. And for lots of women, it's really, really good. I can see the bad side of it, but it's really good. Like, this book has a context outside of the individual reader. So for all those women saying, oh, it's only a bit of fun, oh, it's, I just thought it was a bit of a romp, like, there is a whole swathe of people who they're not considering, who have read this and have thought that genuinely that this is a desirable relationship to have. Mm. Because if it's set out in a book like that for you, and it's set out in a, like, huge bestseller with nothing within the book itself to critique what's happening.
Oh, yeah, if it had critiqued the relationship and said, this is terrible, you know, and she'd left him.
And so, like, yeah, lucky you if you follow certain groups on Twitter, if you have certain friends who can have these opinions and you can discuss them. But if you are already somebody who is on the verge of isolation, somebody that's reading these books, looking for a certain kind of man, and there's nothing in that context to tell you or to give you any sort of information outside of that, then it's like...
And I think the important thing is to critique it. Obviously, I don't think any of us think that a book like this shouldn't be part, like, I don't think it should be banned or censored, but we just need to, like, make people aware of how dangerous these things can be. It might seem like an innocent book, but it's not.
Well, that's why I'm almost more angry about the film, because you have... So the book was a terrible, terrible book, and everybody can laugh about how badly it's written, and we can critique it, and it's actually very, very good that we're critiquing it, because otherwise, if the book hadn't been written and people weren't critiquing it, then these things wouldn't come to light.
Yeah.
But what the film is doing is saying, okay, we've had these discussions, and this is the way that people are feeling, this way women and men are feeling. Let's just not deal with that. Let's not deal with the consent issues. Let's not deal with the issues here. Let's just, like, trot out a kind of watered-down, less BDSM version of the book itself. Mm. And people will come and see it. Like, people would come and see it even if you dealt with consent, Sam Taylor would. Like,
well, actually, I think we all agree that if they did the movie based on the book, it wouldn't be a movie. It would be a porno. It wouldn't be, and it wouldn't be allowed to air in normal cinemas. But moving on a little bit, Frances went around uni asking yet more questions. So thank you to the Leeds University students for answering all her questions. And this is about whether 50 Shades, the book and the movie, was sexually liberating.
Before it came out, more people would, if they were like into that kind of thing, probably would be more reluctant to talk about it openly.
I think it's good in the fact that people are less ashamed to sort of be like, I've read a novel about sex. But the fact that it's this novel, it's pretty terrible.
There are so many examples in the book of when the lead character just submits to him. I don't think that it's a good enough. I don't think it's a good enough expression of sexuality to warrant that, basically.
So that's what the Leeds University students had to say about the book. And then yesterday, I went and basically harassed people outside the cinema and asked them just after they came out what they thought about the movie. So here is their opinion on what they thought about 50 Shades of Grey, the film.
So what did you guys think of the movie?
I thought it was really... It wasn't a well-done film, but I thought it was a well-done adaptation.
Well, they didn't have a good script to go by just from the book, so I thought they did a good job with that. I didn't personally go and see it for the sex.
You saw it for the story?
Yeah.
What do you think about Anastasia as a character?
I like
and I like her, but only because I saw her at the end. Like, before that, she was a bit wet.
Yeah, I liked her defiance at the end.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a healthy relationship, what's shown, or...?
I don't think it's that accurate. I don't think it is.
It's not meant to be a healthy relationship, though.
Yeah, but, yeah, I don't think it's...
And at the end, I think they did quite well to distinguish between the BDSM and actual violence to women, in the sense that she did leave him.
I don't think he is actually violent towards women. I mean, I might be being very naive, but I don't think he's violent. I think it comes from a much deeper place.
I think they did well in the casting, in the sense that she's meant to be a plain, typical student, and they didn't want anyone that stood out. I've not read the book, though, so I don't know how it matches up to the book character.
I actually think she's doing a good job.
Would you describe her as a feminist?
As in, well, it depends what sort of, like, thing you're saying in terms of a feminist. Like, you can be a feminist and
enjoy BDSM.
So that was my interview from various people outside the cinema about what they thought about the movie. And as we ended on BDSM, so we'll move the conversation slightly further into the BDSM area. So the movie is essentially attempting to be a portrayal of a BDSM relationship where Christian is the dominant and Anastasia is the submissive. But there's been quite an outcry from the BDSM community about whether it is an accurate portrayal of what BDSM is. So what are you guys' thoughts on that?
I think it's pretty generally condemned by anybody that knows anything about BDSM, because absolutely everything from the arrangement that they have, from the way he treats her, to just the materials that they're using is just utterly wrong. And this maybe, like, is one of my biggest beefs with this book, is that it seems to be, like, both indulging in and also criticising in terms of, criticising that lifestyle in terms of being like, oh, it's a bit weird, but we can still, like, find it kinky. Whereas anything that actually has respect for BDSM wouldn't be treating it in this way.
And I think it was interesting, one of the girls you interviewed there said, I think it does well to distinguish between domestic violence and BDSM, but I don't think it does. I think it equates the two.
Yeah.
Well, I think they imply...
She was talking about the end of the movie where he basically takes it too far, as in she wants to see more of his deep, dark secret, and so he takes her to his red room of pain. Mm. Where he's got all his BDSM equipment in, and he actually beats her up. Mm. She's lying there and she's crying, and he's basically beating her up. And actually, in the cinema, I saw a couple walk out at that point because, I mean, I felt really uncomfortable. I was sitting there watching abuse. It wasn't BDSM. Anyway, but after that, and this is the ending of the first book, she leaves him and she says no, and she leaves. I think that's what she meant about distinguishing between,
and I wish it stayed like that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but there's three more books,
and I think the main problem is this, like, just trotting out really old stereotypes about people who practice BDSM. They're damaged.
Yeah,
that they're doing it because they've been abused or because they've had a dark childhood or something.
Absolutely,
you know, a lot of people, like loads of people, practice BDSM. It's not a deep dark secret. Like, you know, it's just like a kink that some people like, and I think it's really damaging to assume that there's something wrong with you and that it needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
Like, it's a perversion, you know.
But I think they're using abuse to perpetuate abuse in a way. It's like, he's had something wrong with him, like, his childhood, so now he's kind of like... Well, because Anastasia's quite innocent, so it's kind of like he's abusing a child almost, because, like, she's quite childlike, she's, like, naive, she doesn't really know what's going on, like, in terms of sex, and he's introducing her to his version of, like, BDSM, which, like, I can't really comment because I don't know much about BDSM, but it doesn't seem to me like it is BDSM.
Well, that's
BDSM.
It's literally not. That's the thing. The whole point of BDSM is that it's an agreed space. It's something in which both of you are comfortable in, because the whole point is that people are enjoying it, and, like,
that's... It's all about consent. Consent's the number one.
Absolutely,
and
all about consent.
When I read the book ages ago... And I was a feminist, but I wasn't really as clued in about this kind of thing, so I wasn't really picking it out. But I remember reading a lot of the sex scenes and thinking, this doesn't sound very fun. Like, it doesn't sound like she really knows what she's doing. No. Like, especially the end scene when he's, like, spanking her. I was like, I feel like she's really out of her depth, and he knows what he's doing, but she's sort of, like, a bit clueless, to be honest.
The thing is, he's like, you didn't use the safe word to, like, stop, but I don't think she physically could have done. If you're being, like, beaten black and blue, like, and you're trying not to cry, like...
In a situation that you're not, like, in any way controlled.
Yeah, and you can't, like, physically say, like, stop or whatever the safe word was.
Exactly.
I think a big part of BDSM is also the aftercare. I think the BDSM community are quite big on the aftercare. And, you know, BDSM is absolutely not about a real life dominant and submissive carrying that on in the bedroom. It's about two consenting, clued in adults who choose to take on these kind of roles in the bedroom, which is absolutely fine. But then there is a certain amount of aftercare, whereas time and time again in the movie and in the books, he leaves her alone, and there's picture and frame after frame of her in bed crying by herself. It's devastating.
When you put it like that, it's how did this get past like a publisher? Yeah. Like how?
Like what's one of the things in the book and in the film as well, as like you see it comes up on the news, like B&Q have warned their employees that they're going to sell out of cable ties, because in the book he uses cable ties to tie her up. And anybody that knows anything about BDSM in any way, this guy, that's supposed to be his entire deal. Like, his whole thing is that he's rich and he likes BDSM and he's got nothing else about him. But he doesn't know enough about BDSM, E.L. James doesn't know enough about BDSM to know that you would never tie someone up with cable ties if you know anything about BDSM. Because it's not something that somebody shouldn't be able to get out of, and it's something which, like, will cut into the skin. Like, you are hurting the person. Like, And that's why I think it's literally damaging in real life, like, in the people that are like, oh, I quite like this, like, because maybe I'll get into this. They're going to go and hurt themselves.
And BDSM is, from the research I've done about it and what I've read about it is, you know, people can get hurt and it can go too far. Yeah. So it's so important to do it safely, because even between consenting adults, they can get really freaked out and have a really bad experience, even though, you know, no one overstepped the mark.
Yeah.
So it's really dangerous, you know, to be giving this, like...
Yeah, so telling, like, a load of people the first exposure they have to BDSM culture that you should tie someone up with cable ties without letting them know what's going on. Like, what is that? Like,
One of my friends said something as we came outside of the cinema that almost made me pull my hair out, which was, Christian was abused as a child, so you can kind of understand where it comes from. And I think that's actually the thought that a lot of people will be having coming out of the movie, because he's portrayed really sympathetically. And poor Christian, he's so damaged and he's so mysterious. But, you know, everyone who commits a sin or a crime is going to be damaged. If you murder someone, you're not a normal person who's going to just go out and murder someone. Everyone has a backstory, but there's a line, what's acceptable and what's not. And as you said earlier, Jen, it's really damaging when you're perpetuating the idea that BDSM is something that broken people do.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely not.
Yeah, and like so it's good in the book that, I generally respect the book in terms of... letting people know that kink is okay. The book itself doesn't do that, but the reaction to the book does. It lets people know that there are a lot of people that practice this, the safe ways in which to do it. But that the book itself doesn't say that. The book itself says that people who are doing this are... That's what I was saying about the whole, like, setting a distance from it and saying that it's a bit weird, but also, like, just dipping in just to get, a neurotic kick from it. And that's disrespectful and that's not cool.
Because, like, when I read the book, I've literally, never really, heard of BDSM before. And I read the book I just read them over Christmas. Like, I was 18. That was, my first introduction to it. And the only reason I read it was because, my friends were talking about going to see the film. So I thought, oh, I'll read the book. But I have, a lot of friends that read it when they were, 14, 15, when it first came out. And they kind of, if they've, grown up with this idea that, this sort of relationship, sexual relationship is normal, then I really don't know, because I grew up thinking the Disney films were normal.
That's
such a good point, isn't it? You're just normalized with whatever's going on around you. And the fact that a movie and a book like this is so popular, I mean, it's outsold Harry Potter.
That made me so sad. Can I just say?
So everyone's going to be talking about it, and you're completely right. People are going to grow up, and people are going to, even mature adults who are in relationships, are going to think that that's okay.
Yeah, especially my generation, they've grown up with the Twilight books, thinking oh, it's okay if a guy stalks you. And then when we're kind of coming into this age where we're becoming sexually aware, 50 Shades of Grey happens, and it's just, I think it's so damaging for this generation, especially.
because
that timeline isn't something I've thought about before. That's completely right. Like, yeah. that's what's happening.
And the idea of someone reading this when they're 14, you know, I read this like a few years ago and I was like, oh, this is silly.
Yeah.
But that is very sobering, you know.
One of my friends...
I could probably have read this when I was 14. Yeah, I definitely read this. I'd be like, oh, this is kinky new book.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's terrifying that I could have absorbed these ideas.
Like, I've even had friends that have had like 50 Shades of Grey, like related presents, like for the 16th, 17th birthdays. Like, I think even one of them had like a cake or something to do with it. And it's just not very nice. Like, yeah. I had like a Disney princess cake for my 18th. Like, I'd never dream of asking my mum for 50 Shades of Grey, like related things. Like,
yeah.
I just wouldn't. So I don't understand how people can like just completely normalize and romanticize about something this kind of like harsh and brass in a
way. One of my friends was saying that we were having a discussion about this the last couple of days, and one of my friends said that it's not really that bad. I'd rather my daughter read 50 Shades of Grey than watch pornography. And she was like completely adamant, and I was like, and like I thought about it and I was like, I can't agree, because what 50 Shades of Grey does isn't just depict sex, it puts you in the position of that woman. And if you're a young woman watching pornography, yes, it's like, it can make you feel degraded and it can make you feel terrible, it can make you feel very terrible about your body, but the fact is that it's not what 50 Shades of Grey does is says that this is romance.
This is romance.
Says that this is lifestyle.
Pornography, I think it's I wouldn't have a problem with my daughter reading erotica or watching pornography. I think it's very complicated, you know, there's lots of different kinds of pornography, etc. But I think, yeah, the problem with this book is it's not just the sex. You know, pornography is generally just the sex.
Yeah.
This is a relationship. This is a way to go about your life. You know, the book basically implies that you're nothing without a romantic partner.
Absolutely.
That your identity is, like, completely,
like, I think it goes even further than that, because, like, in a way, he kind of takes control over her body. Like, he chooses what contraception she, like, uses.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Like, he goes mad at her for not eating, like, I think in the second, it's either the second or third book, he, like, completely marks her, like, with love bites because she sunbathed topless. And I don't think that's okay. And then to cover it up because he felt bad, he bought her expensive jewellery. So, no.
It's terrible. It really is just the story of an abuser and a woman who's being abused. And on that note, Fight 50 Shades is a hashtag that some Leeds uni students, Kayla Martell and Joe Muswell, have started, and they are urging students to donate the cost of a cinema ticket to a women's aid shelter instead. They say that the movie perpetuates violence to women, and not to waste your money paying for it, but rather to go and donate to a women's charity. So if you are interested in helping them on their mission, please search the hashtag Fight 50 Shades. We'll be putting that up on our website after as well. But for now, Frances and I would like to thank our lovely panel, Jen and Chelsea. Thank you so much. Cheers. It's been a pleasure
having you. Thank you very much.
So as we move on to the next part of our show, we're going to play our second song, which is Killer by Tuneyards. And this is from Meryl Garber's second album. And she is a front woman and songwriter and a proponent of feminism, which I hope you'll see evident in the song.
Right, and even if you can't tonight, then something that will soothe me. I'm a new kind of woman, I'm a new kind of woman, I'm a don't take shit from new kind of woman. So buckle up, cause we're gonna move fast, driving through things that you gotta get past. Buckle up and I buckle up tight, hear a scream, hear a sound in the dark of the night. But right or wrong, I'm a new kind of killer, right or wrong, we're killer. Can't you tell me something that will be and if you can tonight, then something that will soothe me. I'm a new kind of woman, I'm a new kind of woman, I'm a little bit of a new kind of woman. Fuck her up, cause I'm gonna come quick. Chicka-chicka-chicka, it'll make you sick. All my violence is hearing the sound, singing it cool for the shit to go down. Ready or not, I'm a new kind of killer. Can't you see me, I'm a new kind of killer. Can't you think of something that will feel right? Something that will soothe you. Would you?
by Tune Yards, and you're listening to Gabriella and Francis in the studio on LSRFM. And you can join in the conversation by tweeting with the hashtag TheGSpot or joining in on our Facebook profile, TheGenderSpot, and you can join in our conversation there.
And now it's time for our weekly arts review. Joining us in the studio, we have Emily Legg. What have you got for us this week?
So I'm going to be reviewing the novel The Colour Purple, which was written by Alice Walker in 1982. And it was produced into a film in 1985. It focuses on the lives of a community of black women in the southern United States in the 1930s and mainly follows the story of Celie for 30 years while she tries to challenge each area of oppression she's placed under and finds a way to live happily with herself. So a reason I love this novel so much is that the story is told through the letters that Celie writes. With this style, you can track her progression as she fights the oppressive system. Her grammar improves throughout the novel in each of these letters, and this is particularly clever as education, in my opinion, is a key tool in the process of empowerment. It makes you able to see on the page how well educated Celie becomes as the novel progresses and as she becomes freer from her oppression. I think this strongly resonates with feminism today because you can only really fight an oppressive system once you've learned that it exists. So I think this actually ties in with the conversation that was going on earlier, how people need to know what's wrong with what's going on before they can actually fix anything. One of the characters, Sophia, she starts by fighting this oppression by herself in the beginning, but she is quickly overpowered and punished for this. However, once she works with the other women to improve all their qualities of life, the author actually rewards her by the end of the novel. Celie, the main character, she learns to overcome her abuse by men, mainly her father and her husband, with the help of Shug as her lover and Nettie as her sister. And this is another reason I'm a fan, because the book actually emphasises the importance of relationships between women. To me, it's particularly important today because it shows that women should work together to combat their oppression rather than just thinking of it as a singular problem to themselves. And the film adaptation was directed by Steven Spielberg and featured Whoopi Goldberg as Celie. As a film, it was really good, but it missed out a few key things that the book included, such as Shug's helping Celie to discover what it means to be a woman to her, and also the change of religion from oppressing Celie to truly guiding her. Despite this, though, Whoopi Goldberg's portrayal of Celie is as moving as the book is, and it's a film I'd definitely recommend watching. And although not without a few faults, as in any novel, The Colour Purple is one of my favourite books. It shows the importance of women working together for feminism to work, and it also highlights how it ties in with issues of race, social position and sexuality. So I would recommend reading and watching The Colour Purple, as the story shows the importance of working to overcome all forms of oppression, but also how rewarding it can be for you to personally be able to overcome even just one form of oppression. And I think it's really relevant now as it is when it was first published.
Thanks, Emily. So that was Emily Legg reporting on why The Colour Purple is her favourite feminist book at the moment. And it's not actually one that I've read. I don't know if you read it.
Film is great. I really liked to review. I think it's really refreshing with that film is to see female friendships and to see women working together.
Yeah, it's not often in this sort of thing that you see that female women should actually work together to help everyone rather than seeing them as competition, which is how media so often portrays
exactly
female relationships.
And it's refreshing just to have a film that's really about women's lives and
the
protagonists are all women. So
and especially the racial side of things, how it's based on a minority group of women within that minority.
Definitely.
So thank you so much for that. And we're going to move on to the end of the show. But before I say that, you can like our Facebook page, The Gender Spot, or join in the conversation on Twitter by tweeting either at LSRFM or using the hashtag TheGSpot. And actually, someone's just commented on a post on The Gender Spot saying, my flatmate saw 50 Shades of Grey and brought up the point that in the screening she went to, there were a lot of teenage boys. It would be interesting to discuss how the film could affect their views on what a healthy relationship is like. And they could think that Christian Grey is a good role model. So that's a very good point.
Food for thought.
So at the end of each show, we're going to have kind of a 10 minutes of free time, if you like, where either Frances or I will bring up something that we think is relevant to the week or just something that we want to chat about that week. Mm. And because this week is our first show, I thought we could start it off with talking about feminism and why people are feminists. So I did a quick survey of people that define themselves as feminist, and I thought I'd share with you what I found. But first, Frances is going to give us the definition of feminism.
So the dictionary definition of feminism is a social movement for gender and sex equality.
So I just want to, like, to add on to that, that that's it. There's nothing else on there. And people always start off a conversation with, oh, well, it depends what kind of feminism you mean. And that's all that feminism is, isn't it?
It's true. I think everyone has their own brand of feminism as well. So feminism means something different to everybody. Equality means something different to everyone. But that is really all it means.
So to start off, the first person I interviewed said, I'm a feminist because girls who have a lot of sex are sluts, but boys are cool.
Because I can't walk the street without being told to cheer up.
Because girls' bodies are used to sell everything, but breastfeeding in public is offensive.
Because men occupy the top places in every industry in the world.
Because only 3 women are newspaper editors in the whole of the UK.
Because of the pay gap.
Because guys can't feel like they can rely on someone and are shamed for being emotional.
Because I walk home with my keys in my hand in case someone attacks me.
Because every time I get angry, I'm told I'm on my period.
Because I consider dropping out of my sports team as I look too muscly.
So that is the 10 recently questioned people on why they are feminists. And we'd love you to give us your reasons on why you would consider yourself a feminist by using the hashtag #TheGSpot or commenting on our Facebook page, #TheGenderSpot. Or if you don't identify as a feminist, we'd also like to hear from you.
We'd love to hear why.
So we're just going to round up the show now. And if you've been affected by anything we've discussed on the show, particularly because it's been quite a delicate nature, please do contact the Support After Rape and Sexual Violence in Leeds on 0808 802 3344 or the National Domestic Violence Helpline. And we will post the links to both of their contacts up on our website after the show.
The last song we've got for you is by Corinne Bailey Rae, Put Your Records On, from her eponymous first album from 2005. She was born and raised in North Leeds and studied English literature at Leeds Uni, like me.
So here we go, and we hope you enjoyed the show.
Thanks
next
for listening.
Week we will be discussing women in politics and women in power, so we'd love to hear from you in advance. If not, we'll be joined in the studio by a new panel of guests next week, 1 o'clock on Leeds Student Radio.
Came like cinnamon, so sweet. Little girls double dutch on the concrete. Stay there.
was more than I could take. Pity for pity's sake, some nights kept me awake. I thought that I was stronger. When you gonna realize that you don't even have to try any longer? Do what you want to. Girl, put your records.
Over 100 hours of broadcasting made by 300 students every week.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
And
it's all about you.
You.
Live from Leeds University Union.
At the heart of your student life.
The things that matter to you.
To you.
To you.
To you.
Your news.
Your views.
Your life in Leeds.
Live at 5.
This is The Beat in association with Amber Cars.
Download our app for the quickest taxi service in Leeds.
Shots, £2.50 doubles and free cocktails before 3 a.m. This is madness.
You're right, but it's not just madness. This is The Madhouse. And with 2 Mr. J-bombs and £5, you'd be mad to miss it.
Fab Cafe, the world's first TV and movie themed bar.
And have you thought about where you want to live next year?
No, I literally can't be bothered to start looking.
But you've got to start thinking about these things.
I've got so much work on at the moment. I'm really stressed with that essay deadline, and I don't have time to think about finding a new house.
Sound familiar? If you're worried about house hunting this winter, then Spencer Properties can help.
With a wide selection of properties in Hyde Park, Headingley, Burley, Woodhouse, and the city centre, Spencer Properties offers a friendly and stress-free service.
Head to our offices at Hyde Park Corner or visit spencer-properties.co.uk for friendly advice on renting your first home.
Spencer Properties, come find your new home.
Are you 16 to 24, a job seeker, student or graduate? Want to explore your future opportunities? Want to speak to professional career advisors?
If the answer's yes, then come along to Stemtech Live Careers and Job Expo at New Dock Hall, Armoury Square on Friday, February the 13th.
Join colleges, universities, apprenticeship and recruitment providers and employers. Plus, get advice on grants, bursaries and support on becoming self-employed.
No matter what your ability level or exam results, you'll be able to find something to suit you. So come along with your friends and family and remember that this event is totally free to attend.
Cutting edge speech programming on Leeds Student Radio.
Top tips from the Student Advice Centre.
Join a club or society, as it's a great way to meet loads of like-minded people and get involved.
There are loads of part-time job opportunities in Leeds that'll keep any financial worries at bay, or pop into your Student Advice Centre to help with budgeting and money management.
Staying safe in a new city can be stressful for some. Here at the Student Advice Centre, you can chat to us about anything in confidence, whether it's academic or personal.
And remember, the Student Advice Centre is here for you.